and welcome to the Healthy Wealthy Podcast, where we have outrageously honest conversations about the healthcare 3.0, healthcare 2.0, and especially lifestyle medicine and health coaching. And today, it's my absolute honor to have Dr. Olasky here, which is one of my heroes, one of the founders, I would say, one of the pioneers in health coaching. And we're going to talk a lot about what he's, his past work and where he sees lifestyle medicine and health coaching is going to go. So welcome.
Yeah. Wonderful to be here, Johannes. Thank you.
So yeah, so nice. We already talked obviously a few times before, especially at our health coach summit last May. And you're also going to be at the lifestyle medicine summit, which is October 21st to 30th this year, 2020. Everybody please check out lifestylemedicine.io where you find that information and you can sign up for free, obviously. So Dr. Olasky, let's talk about, let's get started about your history and how this started for you, because I'm very curious, right? I mean, it's always interesting for me if somebody like you that kind of starts a field, right, that hasn't been around in its in the form that it wasn't around, right? It was not available. How did that happen? Give a little background. How it started.
Yeah, you know, it always kind of amazes me, you know, when, you know, very well-known people in the field come up to me and thank me for starting the field, so to speak. It's very flattering, but it's also just makes me very grateful that we were able to pull this together. And it really, health and wellness coaching, I always say it's a form of life coaching. You know, and life coaching, business coaching, all that kind of thing really got started back in the late 80s by business consultants and people like Thomas Leonard and others, who really kind of founded that field. And I was really lucky to get turned on to it pretty early. The International Coach Federation was formed in 1995. And I got my coach training. I began my coach training as a coach myself with Coaches Training Institute in 1996. So I was able to get on board pretty early. And before that, the other half of it, of course, is wellness and the whole wellness field. And once again, I was kind of in the right place at the right time. I was able to be at the very first wellness conference in the history of the world. And that was back in 1978 in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. So I got turned on to that field very early also. And after I'd gotten into this coach training, which built on top of a career I'd already had as a psychologist, I'd already been working in, you know, many clinical settings and university counseling centers and doing a lot of outreach programming and that kind of thing. So I'd always had this approach where it was more than just do therapy and wait for people to come through the door, you know. It was much more, you know, how can we impact the whole community? How can we reach out and do more than just, one-on-one counseling? And so it was a natural fit when I got a hold of coaching that I saw this as a way to move forward. And it was easy for me because I'd already been oriented in a very humanistic psychology approach based on the theories of Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, and others. So it was really a growth-oriented way of looking at, you know, behavioral change rather than a remedial-only way of looking at behavioral change. So it was easy to kind of take off with coaching, and it wasn't long before I started putting the two together. I started doing some classes with the Institute for Life Coach Training, and soon, you know, just branched out on my own. I was also before that even doing presentations at conferences about health and wellness coaching, because it seemed like putting the two together was what was missing. most wellness approaches were community-wide, corporate-wide, trying to influence an entire population of employees or community members, and doing so with a lot of education, doing so with affecting peer health norms, doing things like that, which was all good. But inevitably, it would come down to somebody sitting down with one person and having to have a conversation about how are you going to improve your lifestyle. And that's where people had no clue about how to do it. So and it was pretty
much, right now, right? It's still like for a lot of people, it's just, yeah, I've heard about it, but how actually am I going to do it? Evidence-based. Still. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of well-intentioned, wonderful people would sit down and pretty much try to educate people about how to be well. And they were usually pretty frustrated because they would provide all kinds of great ideas about how to be well, but then people would go out and try to do it on their own and they wouldn't succeed very often. Lifestyle change is really pretty challenging. We're trying to rewire the brain on new neural pathways of habits that have been there for a lifetime, ones that we do pretty much, you know, every day. So they're big neural pathways, right? So we need an approach where we're working with an ally in a consistent way. And that's what I saw needed to come together. And now there had already been efforts by insurance companies and so forth to do something sort of like coaching, where they would pretty much call people up and say, hey, Johannes, how are you doing? Are you taking your medication on time? Do you have any questions about it? And that was terrific because by doing so, the patients out there would be more consistent in their medical adherence to their treatment plan. And, you know, it was worth doing. But inevitably, it wasn't enough because people would be getting the lifestyle prescription from their physician, from other people, from their diabetes educator, from, you know, fitness trainers and all sorts of people of what they need to do. But then it would all fall apart on how to do it. So what I did was take the ICF core competencies, that is real, defined, evidence-based coaching, and put it together with the application to lifestyle improvement. And I did that back in the mid to late 1990s. So it was really new. It was a whole new direction. And it just seemed like what we needed to be doing all along.
Yeah. You know, can I ask you something while we're at this topic? Because you said it requires kind of like rewiring the brain, right? Mm-hmm. And that plus lifestyle changes are not easy. Why don't we just use the known method like, you know, drugs or some other kind of medications or something that just quickly fixes us? Why didn't you stay or didn't you go in that direction versus the hard one, which I don't think is actually really hard once you know how to do it? But I'm really curious about that because so many psychologists went the other way, right?
Well, you know, it comes back to what one of the founders of the wellness field, Jack Travis, used to talk about the pill fairy. And the pill fairy would just sort of magically help you lose weight, you know, manage your stress, whatever, whatever. And of course, you know, it's very tempting and very appealing to just take a pill or some other product that we buy and, you know, magically, you know, things change and we don't have to work at it. But the reality is we're talking about behavior. And as a psychologist, I can tell you behavior changes for the most part through conscious effort and literally being able to rewire the brain. It doesn't, you know, medications can help reduce anxiety. They can help, you know, keep depression from going too low. When people have real clinical problems with those things, there is a real valid use for them. But in terms of improving lifestyle, you know, behavior, what we saw was we're not talking about a pathological population. We're talking about the population everybody, you know. And it's not about a remedial, what's wrong and how can we fix it approach. The neat thing about coaching is the mindset that you have to have is to shift from that clinical, what's wrong and how can we fix it mindset, to a what's possible mindset. What could be, to the coaching mindset, where the coach is the ally that helps assist you in accomplishing what you want to accomplish. And if it's lifestyle improvement, lifestyle change, it's helping you make wise decisions about what you choose to do so that you're not, you know, trying to do what I jokingly call the 27 grapefruit a day diet or something silly like that, but maybe very trendy. You're trying to do something that has been recommended to you, perhaps by your treatment team or by, you know, consultants that you've worked with that you trust, by, you know, some really well-established methods of improving one's health and well-being. But how do you do it? That's where, as we say in America, the rubber hits the road. That's where we either get traction or we don't. And that's where people often need an ally and they need an actual behavioral change methodology. James and Janice Prochaska talk about how we need to help people raise their behavioral change IQ. People don't know how to make behavioral change. We're not really taught how. One of my favorite jokingly things to say is, we buy a Nike poster that says, just do it, and think that's all there is to it. And we go out and try to do it, and maybe we succeed for a while, but the big challenge is sustaining the change, sustaining our success at improvement. That's the big challenge.
It's funny that you say that, because there's this video on YouTube that I saw just recently, which is a woman goes to a psychologist and basically he said, I just charge only $10, well, however long it's going to stay. And at the end, it comes out, she was starting talking about things and he just do it. That's it, was his method, right? Just do it. Yeah, just, right, do right, it. Right. Just do it. Right. Yeah. 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 That easy, right? It's very funny. Oh, video.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember Bob Newhart doing a whole routine about that. He was really patient with listening to people go on and on about their problems and all the reasons. But the reality is people do have barriers. And that's where at some point people may need, not everybody does, but may need an individual to talk to help them get over, under, around, or through those barriers. Because the barriers can be internal, your own attitudes and beliefs, or they can be external. We have tons of people that are in circumstances where it's not easy to be well. We talk about social and environmental determinants of change. Those are really real. You know, I grew up in an area in eastern Ohio that, you know, we call it the buckle of the Rust Belt, 40 miles from Pittsburgh, steel mill shut down, poverty, you know, galore at this point. That community struggles. There is nothing there in terms of recreational opportunities for people, you know, that the city provides or anything like that. You know, when I was growing up, my recreation pretty much was, you know, the woods and the, you know, hills that surrounded the place, because there was nothing to do in town. And you could live in another community where, like I do now, Fort Collins, Colorado, where the Gallup poll said we were the leanest area in the entire country, where it's really easy to be well. The peer health norms are very different. We have access, we have community opportunities, we've got a ridiculous number of miles of bicycle trails, all kinds of things. So we help people with those external barriers, you know, childcare, difficulties at work, but we also have to help people with their own internal barriers. And that's where the coaching conversation comes in. That's where we can't just say, just do it. That's where we have to help that person feel heard and understood. We have to provide empathy. We have to provide the conditions that allow that person to feel safe enough to talk about what they really need to talk about.
Mm. And telling a person that has this feels very depressed, they just don't be depressed, as you said, just not going to work, right? So talk about that, because two things maybe. The first one, you said there is obviously a lot of communities that don't have the support that people need if they have life challenging situations. Talk about that first, maybe, and then let's dive into like what specifically is Health Coach. Give a specific example, because I think a lot of people out there that might listen, they never heard about health coaching, right? It's this vague term, but it's also not necessarily always a good thing, right? Because you know, there's a lot of beliefs around what health coaching really is. So if you could dive into all of these.
Yeah, let me first of all clarify a little bit about health and wellness coaching. About, geez, I think it was like 2012, myself and a core group of people, including Margaret Moore and Karen Lawson and a whole bunch of really excellent people, not a whole bunch, actually a very small group. we pulled our efforts together to form the National Board for Health and Wellness Coaching. And our point in doing that was to provide health and wellness coaches with an independent third-party certification that guaranteed quality for the consumer, guaranteed ethical practices, really helped define what is health and wellness coaching. And we approved many training programs. And there were training programs we could not approve because they didn't meet our standards of what health and wellness coaching really is. They were pretty much, programs where they would tell people what to do to be well, but they didn't know much about how to help them do it. Some of them were glorified vitamin salesmen. So we really had to help the field be defined. I mean, life coaching went through the same thing. Anybody can call themselves a coach. Coaching is not a treatment, so you don't have licensure. Instead, you have to rely on certifications that can either come from the organization that trained the person or from an independent third party. And the ICF, International Coach Federation, is one organization that can do that. But it doesn't specialize in health and wellness coaching. And because we are working with people on really specific lifestyle behaviors, it's different than just general life coaching, leadership coaching, business coaching. We're using a lot of the same, materials and theories and techniques and methodology, but we're really focusing on health and well-being. And so there needs to be some competencies for health and wellness coaches in addition to the ones that a life coach might have. So anyway, we worked real hard. We formed that. We've got it. We've now got over 6,500 coaches certified through that. That it took a very vigorous exam and passed it. That was in cooperation with the National Board of National Board of Medical
Examiners, I think.
Examiners, yes. Yes. So, it's very legitimate. Okay. So that's one thing that you can count on if you have a coach that's from an approved program. That's the number one thing. Beyond that, getting back to the whole idea of how do we work with some of those external barriers? This is where coaching can really help people get strategic and do strategic thinking together to, come up with some experiments, come up with some solutions, come up with some strategies for how to deal with some of these really difficult situations. For one thing, something we see a lot of is a lack of social support. And that is huge because consortiums that have studied how does health behavior really be sustained, can it be sustained, have said it comes down to a shift in self-concept, who you think you are, and community support. Those are the two things you're able to identify. beyond that, it's kind of a mystery. But how do you help someone with greater community support? Well, by making it an actual part of what we call their wellness plan, where they're consciously working on connecting with more resources, more people, with what's out there in their community. And moving beyond assumptions, some people make assumptions that things are not available when in fact they are. Also helping people to experiment and have the courage to try some of those experiments, to reach out to others, to reach out to groups, to find support out there and to consciously build it. And to not get discouraged when our efforts are rejected, or we check out a community organization and find out that it's, you might say, not our cup of tea, you know, to keep on going, to make those connections. So coaches can help people persist and do that. The other thing is, sometimes coaching comes down to some hard decisions. You know, sometimes it comes down to changing a job. Sometimes it comes to moving to a different area. Sometimes it means getting unstuck. And sometimes it comes down to, working with what the person is ready to do and helping them identify that and make the progress they can make. One of the first things I was taught in my coach training was this old saying, nothing succeeds like success. And it's true. That's what builds self-confidence. That's what builds what we call self-efficacy.
Do you believe, based on your long experience, that everyone can change and improve?
Yeah, I do. Now, it might not happen in the work that we do with them. We aren't always there to see the change. But if we do a good job as a coach, let's say, maybe we can open some doors in their thinking. Maybe we can set a foundation of trust that can allow them to do work on their own, that can allow them to reach out later on to others, to have experiences or support from others that may allow them to make these changes. Not everybody is ready to be coached. And sometimes people are not looking for that. So one of the things coaches do is they have a meeting before we start an actual coaching relationship where we help them get clear. Is this what you want to work on? You know, is this the modality that's going to work for you? I mean, if somebody just wants to learn how to cook the Mediterranean diet, you know, they need a class in that, not a coach. And somebody else needs psychotherapy, not coaching. Somebody else needs maybe some real medical treatment before they're ready to do some coaching. Yeah. And that's okay. We try to help them get clear about what they need.
Mm. Yeah. And I think also the degree of what does that mean, improvement, can vary, right? I mean, for example, someone just taking a little bit more responsibility for their own life can be huge. For another one, it's like having some major health issue disappear. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing about health wellness coaching and working with an individual coach or in a small group is that it really does individualize it. It isn't one size fits all. And, you know, like I was saying, our earlier efforts at wellness and health promotion, pretty much we're working with big groups, you know, like all the employees of General Motors, you know, all the employees of Hewlett-Packard or whatever, and or all the people in a certain community. And what we have with health and wellness coaching is a way to individualize wellness. And, you know, I always say it's kind of like a three-legged stool. Coaching alone isn't going to get the job done. You need three legs on that stool. One of them is coaching, the individualization. But another, I believe, needs to be really good health education, accurate information about you know, what you need to do to be well. And then the other leg of the stool is the one we were kind of talking about before. It's a situation, an environment that makes it easier to be well. And there we're talking access, we're talking equity, we're talking availability of what people need to be well. It's in their community, where it's safe to go out for a walk, or it's at their workplace, where there's a norm that says, hey, you know what? You don't have to be available on your cell phone 24 hours a day. Okay? You don't have to check your email at 10 o'clock at night to be ready for the workday tomorrow. We have a norm that says, you know, you work hard while you're here. Go home and relax. Manage your stress. Recover from it. That's a healthy workplace. So, you know, we need all of these things.
Can you maybe guide us and the listeners through some of the steps of health coaching? Because I might think, if I don't know about it, I might say, am I just like a psychologist? Is there just a lot of talk? Is there any tool, any technique, any technology involved? What is that thing, what we call health coaching?
I'm glad you asked that question. That's great. Yeah, there's actually a real behavioral change methodology that well-educated coaches use. And it isn't just, okay, Johannes, what are your problems? What are your issues? Let's just keep talking.
I have not.
Exactly.
Right now. And I don't want to look at it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like I've done a lot of work in the area of stress management, and I've always, you know, told people, if you want to have an infinite conversation, just try to manage stress by trying to deal with all the things that cause stress and all the problems. You'll be talking forever. Instead, you have to find a broader, more holistic way of how do you recover from stress? How do you really work with it? So anyway, back to how health and wellness coaching works. It starts, first of all, not with goal setting, okay? I can't emphasize that enough. I hate coaching that says, so what are your health goals? Let's set up a bunch of goals and accountability, and that's all there is to it. Oversimplification, premature goals that are set usually don't work. So what we do first is we help you take stock of your wellness. What do I have going for me? We're going to use a strength-based positive psychology approach. We're going to help you take a look at your life 360 degrees and what are the strengths that you have as a person individually? What are the sources of support that you have in your life in all sorts of ways, whether it's a wonderful partner at home, a colleague at work, or a four-legged fitness trainer that you go out and walks with every day? What are the sources of support you've got? And what's your current health status? Do you know? Do you have any clue what your blood pressure numbers are? You know, and so forth and so on. Let's take stock. Let's get real clear about where you're at. Then, once we know where you're at, where do you want to be? And this is called helping someone create a well life vision. That is a vision of you living the life that is the best life possible for you. And it's realistic. You could be paraplegic and have a well life vision that accepts the fact that your paraplegic situation is not going to change. But how can you be as well and healthy as possible in every other form, in every other way, you know, considering that? So we now have an idea of where you're at and where you want to be. And obviously, there's a gap between the two. And this is the classic coaching technique called coaching to the gap. We address what has to change to get you to bridge the gap, to go from where you're at to where you want to be. Identifying what has to change is what creates the wellness plan. And having an actual plan to move forward that's based on areas of your life you want to improve, what are the goals that are going to help you improve that area, And then we're going to work every week on some action steps that can help you accomplish those goals. So let's say that you've got somebody who, let's just use one of the most common, well, let's use one like sleep, okay? Instead of talking about weight loss like we always do, let's talk about sleep. So the person wants to improve sleep. Maybe right now they're not getting many hours of sleep a night, and they're suffering because of it. We know there's huge relationship, correlation between inadequate sleep, less than 6 hours a night, and the incidence of all the major chronic health issues, right? All the major diseases. So person wants to improve sleep. Well, that's the area of focus. What would be some goals that would help them accomplish that? Maybe one goal is I want to get at least 7 hours of sleep and so many nights a week. Okay. All right. So what are some health strategies, some what we call sleep hygiene strategies that you can implement this week to help you do that? And we come up with some pretty well-known sleep hygiene strategies, you know, like remove your television from your bedroom. have a critical conversation with whoever shares that bedroom with you about, you know, your need to get to bed earlier, to have, you know, the lights dim or out, to not have a television in there. Another sleep hygiene strategy might be to, really make a commitment to turning off your devices, all those little LED lights that are, reducing your melatonin level.
Face.
Yep, one of those things in your face. Right. So anyway, then the thing about those action steps, whatever they are, whether it's sleep or something else, we ask the person two things. Who can support you in this? And how do you want to set up some accountability so that you can be accountable to yourself to actually follow through and get this done? And that's where coaching can offer some of that accountability. The person can come to the next coaching session. They've made a commitment that they want to talk about it at the next time we get together. So we've got the opportunity now. That person knows they're going to be talking about how many times this week did they succeed at doing that action step. And they can talk about it when they come into the coaching session. Or it might be something where the person needs more frequent accountability. We can set up texting, we can set up email, and set up some way that the person is checking in and keeping track of things so that they're not engaged in self-deception. It's so easy to think, oh, I'm doing pretty well at that. Well, what do the numbers say? How many times a week did you succeed at going to bed by 10:30? Not really that many. Not like what I'd hoped. So it's part holistic. It's a human interaction and support. And it's part really pretty behavioral. It's kind of that combination. So the person ends up with real data that they can look at so that they know where they need to work more at improving. Or maybe one of the things that we discover is, oh, well, that strategy didn't work at all. We need to shift to a whole new one. Or let's say the person was making commitment to going walking. Maybe we tried to do too many times, you know, during the week to begin with. Maybe we need to cut back. Or we need to, you know, improve whatever it is. It's what I call reset, recommit, or shift. You reset the level, you recommit to the same level this week, or you shift to a new action step. So it's that combination of things that allow the person to feel like I've got a real plan, really working on this very consciously. I've got an ally that helps me work through the barriers, and we've got accountability so that it really happens.
I'll ask you, at what point is there a rewiring of the brain? And I guess what you mean by that is rewiring, that a new habit is established, that is kind of automated, right? Like on a software and a computer or whatever, a smartphone. Is that what you mean? And when does that happen?
Well, you know, one of the things that has been a great myth is it takes X number of days to change a habit. And that is a great myth, because what the scientists will tell you is the answer we hate to hear. It depends.
That's the scientific term, very scientific.
Yes.
But isn't it black and white? We most of us these days, we just go black or white. There's nothing between, but it seems like there is.
Yeah. I mean, habits are rooted in our values, what's important to us, what we care about, as well as, you know, just, you know, neurons and synapses and all that stuff. You know, we are not computers. Every time we try to compare ourselves to a machine, we screw up. And we sell ourselves short. We really do. I mean, yeah, there's some basic general parallels. You know, we can talk about memory banks and, you know, bandwidth and all kinds of things as metaphors. But we've got to realize they're metaphors. You know, every time we try to replicate a machine, see a machine, you know, it can work a heck of a lot harder than we can. Machines don't have to have the downtime recuperation time we do. And that's where, you know, stress management comes in. Stress management is mostly about stress recovery. You know, we need to get into the psychophysiology of the other side of the autonomic nervous system so that we can recover from stress. Managing it, yeah, there's some strategies that can help, but it's not just a cognitive thing. It's really a psychophysiological thing. And so likewise, you know, when it comes to changing behavior, it takes repetition and it takes self-compassion. You know, when the old habit reasserts itself, people will often get upset with themselves. They do what they call beat up and give up, right? They get real critical of themselves. Oh, I don't have enough willpower. I've got weak character. The heck with it. I'm going to quit trying to change this. Well, the fact that you performed that old habit again is simply evidence. Yeah, you got a pretty big neural pathway up there on that one. That's how it works. And be kind to yourself because, yeah, it showed up again. But the cool thing is you caught yourself. You know, when you had that hand buried up to the elbow in the bag of Doritos and corn chips or whatever, and you did not eat the whole bag, you know? So be kind to yourself. You're catching yourself, and that's where you are attempting to establish a new neural pathway for a new behavior. And it takes time. How much time? Hate to say it, it depends.
It really depends on every individual. I really like what you just talked about the self-compassion. I think we're going to have to close soon. Why don't we close with that? Because I think I've seen it so often, this kind of beating up ourselves, and it could be the tiniest thing that for someone else is like, oh my God, that's nothing, right? I mean, why would you even think about beating yourself up and going after yourself, so to speak? Can you talk a bit more about that self-compassion and how to cultivate it, how to improve or let it grow inside of us?
Absolutely. One of the ways that coaches help people with that is through the skill of acknowledgement. And this is an active listening skill that we teach coaches to do with people. And it, number one, it has to be genuine. You can't just, you know, compliment somebody in a phony kind of way. That people see right through that. And they don't like it. They resent it. Rightly so. But when we can notice something that a client is doing and feed it back to them and acknowledge it, it really helps, because the person is often not acknowledging it themselves. let's say, well, a lot of these lifestyle improvement goals that we have are big goals that take a long time. So let's use the classic example of weight loss. To lose a large amount of weight, it takes many months to do it in a healthy way. And sometimes people are critical of themselves until they finally hit that number that they were shooting for. You know, so many pounds, so many kilos, whatever it is, so many stone, as they say in England. And until they hit that number, they don't feel like they've succeeded. If the coach can help them acknowledge, hey, I lost my first 10. Wow. And how do I feel different? You know, I had a client one time that had to lose 100 pounds. And she lost her first 10 pounds. And she got on the phone with me and she was so excited. She said, oh, this is so great. I can't believe this. This is so wonderful. I walked down the stairs today, and for the first time in years, my knees did not hurt. Physical therapists will tell you, you take 1 pound of weight loss, it takes 15 pounds of pressure off your knees. She had taken 150 pounds of pressure off her knees by losing 10 pounds. And she was excited. So it's building on that. Acknowledgement is also something people need to learn how to do themselves. And one of the classic experiments we do as coaches is ask the person, would you be interested in writing down each day three things that you want to acknowledge yourself for? And, you know, we often talk about, you know, gratitude, writing those things down, or affirmations and so forth. And that's all good too, but the nice thing about writing down an acknowledgement is it's something that you actually did. And now you're writing it down and giving yourself credit for it. It can be either a thing you accomplish, or it can be something where your character showed up in a way that you want to acknowledge. I want to really acknowledge myself for having the courage to talk to my supervisor about flex time at work. I really want to acknowledge myself for the sensitivity I showed to that friend of mine who was in need. You know, that's another type of thing to be acknowledged. And by doing that, people can start to give themselves more credit for what they do. That's a big part, I think, of self-compassion. And the other is just that kind of self-forgiveness, that kindness to oneself. There's some wonderful resources for this. There's a professor by the name of Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F, who has a whole, I think her website is selfcompassion.org, self-compassion.org. And she writes about compassion in many ways. And one of the things she likes to write about here recently is what she calls fierce self-compassion. And fierce self-compassion is essentially appropriate assertiveness, where you care enough about yourself, you're going to set limits. And you're going to say no to people that are always asking you to do one more thing, right? And you realize, no, you know what? If I'm going to live my life in balance, I can't do that. And so I'm going to defend myself in a way and defend my wellness by saying no. That's fierce self-compassion. That's a good thing. You don't have to hurt anybody. You're just simply setting a limit. And that's hard for some folks to do that have always been people pleasers and so forth. But, you know, that's one aspect of it. It's being kind to yourself.
Wow. Being kind to ourselves and self-compassion. I think that is just an amazing way to end our talk, our podcast here. And, thank you so much again for being here, Radosky. For, as I said at the beginning, start this field that a lot of us are in and we just love. Can't wait to see you at the Lifestyle Medicine Summit, which you're going to talk about, right? Which is, again, October 21st to 30th. So you're going to be there too. And just for everybody listening, you know, the summit is going to happen, again, 21st to 30th of October. And this year, our focus is about not about information, about implementation. Because from my perspective, we are beyond that. And maybe just a last thought about this, because the science, I think, is very, very clear. And obviously, you can get tons of science again and again and again, which a lot of scientists do. But the question now that we have to answer is, how can we implement this? And that's why we kind of use the term healthcare 3.0 a lot, you know, versus healthcare 2.0. Is the current kind of old healthcare system? What's the new one going to look like? So what's healthcare 3.0? And from my perspective, and a lot of us, it's about prevention, lifestyle medicine, health coaching. And maybe talk about that a minute to kind of wrap up. Where do you see this going?
Well, I love the fact that you're doing that. It's the next logical step because, you know, one of the things that I've done is I've done a lot of work on scope of practice for health and wellness coaches. I was actually chair of the committee for the national board that established our scope of practice statement and our code of ethics. And one of the things that's become clear to me is what I call the what, the how, and the why of health and wellness coaching. The what needs to come from trusted, reliable sources, you know, like our treatment team and others. And the how, that's where health and wellness coaching comes in. We help people with how do I implement? How do I make this really happen? Mm-hmm. And the why, that's what we help our clients to discover, their own motivation to do this. Now, what you're talking about is a combination of that coach doing that individually or in a small group of people, but you're also talking about the bigger picture of how do we implement lifestyle medicine on a broader scale across the population? How do we reach more people more and do it more equitably? How do we do these things in a systemic way? So there's a systemic side that needs to be addressed, and I'm sure you're going to have some fabulous speakers talking about that. And then there's the, you know, how do we individualize it side of how do we implement it?
Absolutely. And it's exciting times in any case, right? It's always good and lots to look forward to. And to me, I'm super positive. You know, we're going to see probably a lot of changes and transformations. That's always like an interesting time. But I think people are ready, you know, because I think especially the last 2 years, there's been a lot of, observing what doesn't work. Well, what does work? And health coaching for sure, lifestyle medicine work. That's for sure. Thank you again. Thanks so much for being here. Can't wait to see you at the Lifestyle Medicine Summit October. And thanks so much for everything you do. Amazing.
You're certainly welcome. It's my pleasure. Glad we can reach more people with this message.